From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we go to Moscow in the Russian Federation and speak with analyst Mark Sloboda. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, Don, I'm alive. Thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you on CPR.
Our honor and pleasure also. So, let's see. I guess we will talk about the meeting that we didn't get a chance to talk about yet between President Putin of Russia and President Erdogan of Turkey.
Okay, so this meeting happened right at the end of September, last Wednesday. It was a meeting in Sochi, Russia. It comes on a tale of almost regular meetings between Putin and Erdogan two or three times a year bilaterally for the last few years. They've been having regular contacts. Let me provide a little backdrop to Turkish-Russian relations in the modern day.
Yeah.
Turkish-Russian relations were pretty good up until about 2011, 2012, and that's when things started to go down. Before that, there was some complication with a number of Chechen jihadists that were operating out of Turkey, Russian secret services would periodically pop down and assassinate them. But Turkey did not really take any action to control them. But that was viewed as kind of a minor irritant.
You know, just let me right there for one second. Years ago or in a saner world where one with less euphemism, that would actually be, looking at that. Yeah, NATO country is basically training and sending the military operatives into Russia. Be treated as if there were, an invasion of Russia by NATO, and that they were at war, some low grade, but at war.
Yeah, it certainly could be seen that way. And certainly the Turkish government was looking, at the very least, looking at the other way with regard to these Chechens, using their territory as a fallback base of operations and safe haven, and very likely there was some Turkish intelligence support of them. And NATO, Turkey is of course a NATO member.
This sounds like what the U.S. accused Afghanistan of doing after 2001, actually, and the response there was rather aggressive.
Pakistan, you mean, right?
No, they accused
Afghanistan,
and that was the raison for,
for the operation.
And all the other wars, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, that's true. That's very true.
The whole, authorization for the use of military force, the AUMFs, as they call it, that was the raison. There are terrorists lurking there that struck us.
Yes. And yet Russia refrained from invading and occupying Turkey for some reason.
Which they could do very easily.
Yeah. No, they could not.
On the ground, I mean. On the ground.
Well, Turkey, even on the ground.
Really?
Turkey is a NATO member, and Turkey does have the second largest army.
Oh, really?
In NATO.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Turkey has been building up its military forces, for many reasons, over the last few decades. Greece, its ongoing conflict with fellow Greece NATO member Greece not being the only reason, but Turkey is I wouldn't say they're a great power, but they're definitely a major regional power, and they've got influence that extends into the Caucasus, Central Asia, all over the Middle East, into Europe. They are not someone to be dissuaded with.
They have a half of 437,000 active personnel under arms, apparently, and then 380,000 in reserve. And the population is about half of Russia's, right? It's about
yes. And they've got significant NATO armaments, right? Because they've been buying if not the most advanced, then probably second line, you know, NATO armaments, you know, for several decades.
Oh, for sure. And the U.S. would use the first line anyway. If Russia invaded, I mean, I didn't mean to, I was ignoring this just for the sake of saying that physically they could occupy it pretty easily.
Yes.
But there would be no such thing because Russia would get blown up, then the U.S. would get blown up, and then there's no more Russia.
Yeah, there'd be World War III, so in 2011, Erdogan signed on with the Obama administration's plans to overthrow the Syrian government by backing jihadis in the country. And they signed on in a big way. And Turkey was absolutely instrumental to this because Turkey, at least, you know, for the northern part of the country, shall we say, Turkey is where everything happened out of.
Right.
You needed to get arms, funding, training to these Islamists and jihadists. And there's a very fine – there's a not fine line. I should say a very gray, porous line, you know, between the two persuasions. Not that I think either one of them is a better solution. You know, this is a very sectarian
feud.
A feud in Syria. You have all of the – shall we say, the ethno-religious minorities of Syria, including most secular Sunnis, against Sunni Islamists and Wahhabists. And the Sunni Islamists and Wahhabists were supported in a big way by Turkey. The U.S. actually had what it called MOM centers for years. And that was literally the acronym they used. And that is where all of the funding from all the states aligned to overthrow the Assad government in Syria, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, Bahrain, the United States, the UK, Turkey, et cetera, you know, and most other EU countries. That's where they came to collect their paychecks, they drop off their families, to receive their training, receive their, you know, the distribution of arms happened out of there. In the South, this was done for a while with Jordan. And that's how, you know, the proxy war to overthrow the Syrian government with jihadis went. And of course, early on in that conflict, all through the conflict, these Islamists and jihadis were allied with Al Qaeda. They still are today. In fact, Al Qaeda still controls, you know, at least half of Idlib province, which is the largest territorial extent that and the largest number of jihadists under arms that Al Qaeda has ever had. Technically, Al Qaeda is stronger, you know, on an international basis than they ever have been. But early on in the conflict, they were all allied with ISIS as well. ISIS was a partner of the U.S., Turkish and Saudi-backed Islamists and jihadists, and with Al Qaeda and ISIS, they were all together when Aleppo was overthrown.
And by the way, parallel track, and actually it went to its conclusion. In Libya, you had some of the same elements, and with Qatar offering their placing their officer corps in charge of them on the ground, and.
Yes.
A no-fly zone imposed on them so the Libya's Air Force couldn't defend the country, and a seven-month daily, 11-hour-a-day in every city air campaign by NATO in support of the jihadis on the ground that were being run by the Qataris. This is how they play now. I want people to understand that. They were not able to get a no-fly zone in Syria, so Syria's Air Force is able to defend the country. And there is another power in Syria with an Air Force also, yes, and that's Russia. And now you get a stalemate in Syria and, you know, a runover in Libya, and they will characterize Libya as a defense of freedom and Syria as an invasion by Russia.
Yeah. So Russia didn't like this activity going on. Syria has, you know, long been an ally or you know, a sub-client state relationship. It wasn't quite that much degree of control. But Russia and the Soviet Union have several times in the last century been the guarantor of Syrian sovereignty and independence against the West. And in 2015, Russia militarily intervened, sending troops into Syria. This prevented plans that were ongoing from the Obama administration and Turkey to input a no-fly zone, a safe zone, as they called it, which would, you know, then morph into the larger regime change operation in North Syria. And this was really fraught, because for Turkey, for Russia to get troops to Syria, naval forces have to pass through the Dardanelles Straits, which are, of course, governed by Turkey. Air forces could not fly over Turkey because, you know, Turkey was essentially an enemy in this conflict.
Right.
And at one point, Turkey shot down
a Russian plane,
a Russian warplane on the Syrian-Turkish border. With American-made jets, firing American-made missiles, and then
probably one with of the AWACS, pilots, by the way, probably with American operating AWACS.
Then the, one of the pilots was killed on the ground by Turkish, or in the parachute, falling by Turkish jihadists and Turkish Grey Wolf nationalists, who were on hand, you know, providing support for them. And one of the others was eventually, the other pilot was eventually rescued out through a combination of operations with Iranian special forces. Soleimani was actually involved in planning that, and Hezbollah. So tensions between Russia and Turkey got really tense after that, after the shooting down of the Russian plane. Russian air assets had to fly around Turkey, around down through Iran and Iraq, which gave Russia airspace access, and then into Syria the other way, because they had to go around Turkey. Turkey could not block the flow of naval assets because of the Montreux Treaty, which, if they actually did break it, would probably quickly lead to a World War III type situation. It's a very important geopolitical choke point, the crossing of the terms of the treaty of which would be a major global incident. They didn't, although they did attempt several times to kind of slow traffic, Russian traffic, through the straits. Anyway, Russia managed, you know, the intervention in support of the Syrian government regardless, and put heavy sanctions on Turkey because of all of this. Russian ambassador to Turkey was shot and killed by a Turkish nationalist in Ankara. And that further complicated the incident. And Russian bans on Turkish agriculture, tomatoes, produce, and Russian tourism to Turkey was seriously hurting the Turkish economy. And then when the U.S. The Obama administration began slowly to back out of the whole intervention thing, and then when Trump came in, the Trump put a stop to the funding of the jihadists by the CIA, the Islamists and the jihadists by the CIA, leaving and Saudi Arabia and Qatar also had dropped, and Jordan had all dropped out by that time, basically leaving Turkey with the jihadi Islamist bag. And instead, Trump's Pentagon doubled down on what had all the time been the Pentagon support for the Kurds in East Syria as kind of a third force. And that standoff continues in Syria to this day, with the U.S. and its proxy Kurds in East Syria sitting on the oil and the wheat, Turkey and its proxy jihadist Islamists and Al-Qaeda sitting in North Syria. With the Syrian government, along with its allies, Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah, controlling the majority of the country and certainly the majority of the population. That continues to this day. But Turkish-Russian relations have also deteriorated in Libya, where they are on different sides of a proxy conflict there, with Turkish security contractors supporting the east of the country, and
where the jihadis are. That's where the jihadis are, basically.
Oh, no, that's the west of the country now. Tripoli. The Islamists are now based out of Tripoli, which is where Erdogan is, and he's actually sent Syrian mercenaries, his Syrian mercenaries, which have become kind of Bashi Bazouk neo-Ottoman irregulars for him around the world, in his neo-Ottoman stylings.
Yes.
So there's still an Abkhazia conflict that is ongoing there. Then Turkey became involved in the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan,
right,
which was, has long been seen, the Caucasus has long been seen as Russia's zone of influence. They started backing Azerbaijan, building up Azerbaijan's right. military, providing drone support for them, supposedly sending some Syrian mercenaries as well. And while Russia has kept and keeps good relations with Azerbaijan, also sells them arms, by the way, it has better relations with Armenia, nominally, which is part of the Collective Security Treaty Organization,
yeah.
the kind of loose NATO analog.
Right.
That
just so if people look at a map while we're describing this, because what you're talking about here, Russia doesn't have a direct border with Turkey. In between Turkey is Armenia, and to the east of Armenia, Azerbaijan, and to the north, Georgia, and then Russia. And so Russia borders Azerbaijan and Georgia there. And so what happens is you have, with Turkey siding with Azerbaijan, they put a squeeze on Armenia, which is between the two of them. And you have
Georgia,
also Georgia.
Which is leaning to the U.S. To
right.
The
Georgia has also been, well, a lot of those, they had all kinds of, you had a separatist movement there and military activity back when, but like in 2005, I guess it was, 2006.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so if you see that, essentially NATO is looking to move all the way up to Russia's border there with alliances, and Armenia is kind of in the way in this, but they're in the middle of Turkey and Georgia and Azerbaijan and the northern part of Iraq where the Kurds are.
Yeah, Russia certainly didn't like Turkey trying to intrude their zone of entrance into this conflict and help spark this conflict. Russia has long liked that as a Froggen conflict where they balance their relations within Armenia and Azerbaijan. And once again, Russia, after significant gains by the Turkish-backed Azerbaijani forces, a ceasefire was brokered by Russia that nominally included a token spot without any real substance in that for Turkey in the ceasefire agreements. But Russia has managed to once again at a new level balance those relations there. But Turkey has also become a drone power over the years. It used its drones to some success in both Libya and Syria when Russian air defense wasn't immediately on hand. And then it used them very effectively in Azerbaijan against Armenian-backed forces in the Nagorno-Karabakh and what were the seven then Armenian-occupied territories. Erdogan has now selling drones to U.S.-backed putsch regime in Ukraine, in Kiev, and to Poland as well. And these are seem to be fairly effective combat drones.
Yeah.
So these are not little, you know, remote controlled things. So Russia has been looking on this, they are seeing geopolitical conflict
right.
With Turkey across a whole length of borders.
Yep.
And then going into the UNGA a few weeks ago, Erdogan at the UNGA says, quite loudly and provocatively that he that Turkey does not recognize the Russian annexation of Crimea because,
right.
of course, because of the connection between the Ottoman Empire and the Crimean Khanate centuries
right.
ago,
right.
they still maintain a paternal attitude that they think they have a claim in Crimea as well. So that is the Russian-Turkish side. Going in. Now, Erdogan has long played Russia and the U.S. off each other to his own geopolitical advantage.
Right.
They both need Turkey. The U.S. needs Turkey in NATO to project military power into the Middle East and to provide that bulwark, kind of containing Russia from the south.
Which is also what the whole thing over Crimea is about. In fact, including the coup of Ukraine to grab that, because that's this major Russian naval base in that part of the world.
And the Black Sea has become a zone of geopolitical interest again, too, because of that.
Right.
And Russia needs Turkey, one, because it's, you know, a neighboring state just across the Black Sea. And they control the strait, the Dardanelles Straits, through which Russian naval forces and the Black Sea access the Mediterranean and then onto the Atlantic. But also trade. Right. Which is, you know,
business,
a major choke point there. Right.
Right. Yeah, right.
They have significant business relations, Russia and Turkey. Now, while all of this geopolitical conflict is going on, Russia and Turkey have managed their relationship in a different way than the U.S. does with countries that it has geopolitical conflicts with. When the U.S. has geopolitical conflicts, it also wages economic warfare against them, right? Sanctions them, you know, seven ways from Sunday and you know, tries to stop off all trade and all of its allies from doing trade and so on, and is now, I don't know, sanctioning a significant portion of the global population at this point.
They're sanctioning themselves into a corner.
Russia and Turkey have been, you know, through a series of meetings between Putin and Erdogan, have compartmentalized their relationships. They've put economics basically in a separate box from their geopolitical conflict flashpoints. And their economic trade is booming. Russia provides most of Turkey's energy through natural gas. They've built a TurkStream pipeline now through Turkey, which brings gas, you know, another supply of gas to Turkey. This is just in the last few years. This pipeline was also sanctioned, like Nord Stream 2 to the north, by the U.S., but it received much less publicity during that. This pipeline now extends into Europe, southern Europe, and it has become a southern route for Russia to send gas into Europe, going around Ukraine through Turkey, through which, of course, Turkey then collects transit fees. And Russia is building a nuclear power plant for Turkey. Russians buy a lot of Turkish produce, tomatoes and so on. A lot of Russians go on vacation in Turkey. It's very important tourism. Russian tourism is very important for what is a very struggling Turkish economy. Russian Erdogan at this meeting then thanked Putin for Russian firefighting planes, big giant planes that dump water, for coming to Turkey and help fighting forest fires in Turkey this year. So they've got a very – they separate their burgeoning economic relations from their geopolitical conflict. And a lot of people don't understand that. I think it's – my best way to picture this is to picture the relationship between Turkey and Russia is Putin and Erdogan waltzing together, hand in hand, across a chessboard with daggers poised at each other's backs and smiles on their faces.
Right.
That's the way to picture it. It is – they're both too important to each other. They also both do not – very much are trying to avoid – being drawn into a direct war with each other because they see the long history of Turkish-Russia wars and they, you know, through history of Ottoman-Russian Romanov Empire wars. And they know that such a war would be disastrous to both countries. So they go out of their way. Meanwhile, Turkey playing Russia and the U.S. off each other has had estranged relations with the U.S. since the coup attempt against him a few years
2016.
Ago.
2016. That was after – okay, it was November of 2015 the Turkey shot down the plane.
Yes.
And then it was in 2016 that there was an attempted coup, which the U.S. was strongly implicated in favor of a guy who's about 50 miles from where I am right now in the Poconos. And the word that we got was that Erdogan was tipped off about it and protected, saved him by Russia.
Yeah, that didn't happen. And both Russian and Turkish leaders haven't admitted as much.
Right.
Personally, I don't believe that the U.S. was actively involved in regime change efforts against Erdogan in Turkey because they're usually much better at about it. They're much smarter.
They tolerated.
There were no elements of civil society. There was no mass protest.
Right.
None of the things,
they do.
You typically see.
Right. But they did tolerate it. This guy is here in the Poconos.
Yeah. They did not warn. Well, okay. I don't think it was the Gulenists.
Oh, real? Okay, that's another question.
I don't think the Gulenists were involved in it. Russia. The actual comments from Putin on it were, well, if Turkey, if Erdogan says it was the Gulenists, we have I have no reason to say anything different. That's exactly what he said.
That's pretty slippery. Yeah.
An abortive Kemalist coup, like every coup before it, where the Turkish military, as the secular guarantee of the Turkish Republic, has staged coups against democratically elected Islamist leaders in an attempt to maintain the secular nature of the republic.
Right.
This was the last such one, and it died with a whimper because Erdogan knew it was going to happen and kind of early released it under controlled circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the U.S. did not warn him about it, and a lot of it was done by U.S.-trained Turkish Air Force forces, and some of them were people who were stationed at Insular, at one of the U.S. Military bases in Turkey. But I don't think the U.S. was actually involved in supporting them, but I don't think that they warned Turkey about it either. Erdogan knew it was happening. Russia did send a message to Turkey. I think Turkey already – Erdogan already knew it was happening, but appreciated that –
the heads up.
The difference in the two relationships there.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, that went off, and Erdogan's plane was almost shot down. He went up into his version of Air Force One, and the Turkish Air Force, I don't believe it was Gulenists. You know, I don't believe there's that many Gulenists in the Turkish military.
Flying F-15s.
Believe it. Right? The Turkish Air Force attempted to shoot down Erdogan had a problem with this because his air defense, he has not been granted Patriot missiles by the U.S. And what air defense he has, you know, the identify friend foe function doesn't, you know, allow him to shoot on U.S. Aircraft, right? U.S. built aircraft. This is why Erdogan wants the S-400 so bad from Russia, the air defense system, that he's willing to risk U.S. sanctions for because of that incident, which was a personal threat to his life. It's a hedge against, you know, Western Air Force, you know, if they decide someday to overthrow Erdogan. But more than that, it's a hedge against his own
people,
military,
right,
which is – always lean towards the U.S., particularly the Air Force, that if such an incident happens again, he's able to act against it with Russian air defense, which would have no problem firing on U.S.-built warplanes. That's why he's willing to go to such extremes there.
I got you. We only have like a minute left, so... I know. All we did was set it up. We didn't get to get into the whole meeting. But.
Yeah. Going into this meeting, Erdogan didn't get what he wanted. He didn't even get a meeting with Biden on the sidelines of the UNGA. And he was very disappointed in that. And he announced out of it saying, I'm going to seek better relations with Russia. He said that publicly. Mm-hmm. And then he went into the meeting with Sochi, with Putin in Sochi. Now, of course, Russia, you know, would like to I think Putin would really like to tell Erdogan to go pound sand up his butt. But he's pragmatic and cold-blooded and realist in relations, and he sees another chance to further drive wedges between Turkey and NATO, which is to, you know, Russia's, you know, severe advantage. Not that Turkey's going to drop out of NATO, but the tense relationships there make it hard for NATO to operate. So Russia, of course, is exploiting that. They didn't really come to any agreements on any of the geopolitical flashpoints, but they may have toned down a big military buildup on both sides in Idlib, where both sides look like they were about to start renewed conflict in northern Syria there.
That's very, very good news, too, because it means, at least at the moment, that that's not going to flare up into something much worse.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you very much. We'll speak with you next week. Maybe we can go into some of the details of that, depending on what happens between now and then.
Thanks for having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.